Why did Spider-Man pick his nose? To get rid of the Green Goblin.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Your show was better when you had medical questions. Hey!
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve, and this is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question, you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. You know, you can follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine and follow our website at drsteve.com. Or visit it. You don't have to follow it. That would be stupid. For podcast medical news and stuff you can buy. And most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. Please don't forget stuff.drsteve.com. Stuff.drsteve.com for all your Amazon needs. And in addition, you can go there and you can see the Rode computerized robotic stringed instrument tuner, and it will blow your mind. And it blew my mind. They were so inexpensive. So go there. I think you can go to Rode.drsteve.com too. Let me see if that's right. At Rode.doctor, and you got to spell out doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, steve.com. Let's see if that takes you there. Ooh, yes, it does. Okay. So Rode.drsteve.com. It is Rode, R-O-A-D-I-E. Or you can just go to stuff.drsteve.com. Let me do that. Dr. Steve. Now, that one, you don't have to spell it out. You can just do drsteve.com. But it's just better to spell it out because that's the main website. And is it going to do anything? Yes. And then there's Manuka Honey. And then you go down and there's the Rode, and there's a video of it working. It'll blow your mind. If you know someone that has a stringed instrument like a mandolin or a guitar or a bass, you can buy a robotic tuner for them. And it's under $200. I think it's like under, let me see how much it is. Sorry, Rode.drsteve.com. Let's go to products. So the Rode 3 doesn't do bass. It does everything. It's $129, okay? And the bass one is the really heavy-duty motor. That's all it is. It's just $149, so it's under $152. You can program different instruments. You can program different tunings. You want to do a Rolling Stones open G tuning so you can play Can't You Hear Me Knocking properly. You can do that, and you just put it on the tuning key and pluck it, and it will tune it to the proper tuning within a couple of cents. It's perfect. So it's neat. So stuff.drsteve.com. Check out tweakedaudio.com. Offer code FLUID, F-L-U-I-D, for the best earbuds for the money and the best customer service anywhere. And if you want to lose weight with me, I am 100% back on track. Noom.drsteve.com. For an old man, I look decent. And the only reason I look decent is because of Noom. Noom.drsteve.com. You get 2 weeks free, 20% off if you decide to do it. It's just a 3-month program. It's not a diet. It's a psychology program. It will help you in other parts of your life too. Maybe it did me. And then check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. All right, very good. Well, You may have noticed, no Dr. Scott, no Tacey today. Tough shit. I don't know. I'm recording this at 10:30 at night on Thursday, what's the date today? The 18th of February. Just because we've been murdered at work. We've had a nice slacking off of COVID-19 cases, except in my team. And so, you know, when you're the chief of all chiefs, when people are out, I guess then that means you have to go fill in for their shifts. So that's what I mean. You know, that's what people have to be seen. So I've been working my butt off and loving it, actually. So I'm looking forward to retirement, and that will be in 1 year and 7 months. And then, boy, do I have some things to say when I don't have to worry about losing my job. So stay tuned for that, assuming that I survive. I'll be moving to South Carolina, coincidentally the same state that a former host from this channel is moving to. It is totally a coincidence. It's just a cool place. And Mount Pleasant, South Kakalaki will be my home. And I'll be doing quite a different show at that point. Oh, boy, have I been holding some things in. But until then, we'll be doing your medical questions. And I've got a bunch of them today. I don't have any topics to do. F COVID, enough is enough. We've got some left over from last time that I'd like to do. I hope you all heard me finally solve the probability question last week. But we have some others to do, and just a ton of questions. So the first thing we have to do, though, is get our disclaimer out of the way.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
Boy, isn't that true. So, I have to get up at 5:30 tomorrow, and I'll be finishing this around 1 in the morning. So, not a whole lot of sleep for your old pal tomorrow night, or tonight. But anyway, let's see what we got here.
Hey, it's me again. Hi, Tacey. Sitting here listening to the radio.
She's not here, jackass. This is Stacy DeLoach, everyone. KK4WZI is his ham radio call sign. If you happen to hear him on the airwaves.
A little radio net. I know 99% of people don't know what that is, but
well, they do now.
The COVID question, does your blood type affect your vulnerability to COVID? Like, is somebody type O less susceptible to COVID?
Well, it sounds like you already know the answer.
Type A is more susceptible?
Because that's the answer.
Bye, Tacey.
Bye, Stacy. I think Stacy knew the answer to that. So he was asking a question he knew the answer to, thinking that it would stimulate conversation on the show, except there's no conversation to be had because I'm sitting here by myself. But it is true that there is a slight preponderance of infections in people with type A blood type and a slight decrease in infections in type O. Now, I think I did this on my very first COVID sit rep, which I quit doing because it's just the same stuff week in and week out at this point. But when it was more novel, you know, I was doing them every week. So what they did was just very simple. You get 1,000 people in the emergency room or wherever that you're testing for COVID-19. And at the same time, when you're testing them, you check their blood type. And what they found was that compared to the population, there was a slight increase in number of patients infected who were type A and a slight decrease of people who were type O. So let's look real quick. Let me just, let's say percentage. We could ask Echo, I wonder if she would know. Echo, what's the percentage of people who have type O blood type? Okay, that's great. Echo, what's the percentage of type O blood type in the population?
Sorry, I'm not sure about that.
That's just great. Okay, 45% of Caucasians are type O, 51% of African Americans, and 57% of Hispanics are type O. So let's just say you took all the white folks and you tested them for their blood type, and at the same time that they come in with COVID-19, and so it might be 42%. It was actually, I think it was a 20% difference. So 20% be 8. So, you know, you'd figure 30, well, okay, 37% of people would have come in and had type O compared to the population, which is 45%. And then let's say percentage of type A. Because remember, they're not all the same. Okay, here we go. Type A positive is 34%. A negative is 6% of the population. So we would say 40%. So 20% of that would be 8. So you'd see 48% with type A. Now, this does not mean that people with type A are doomed to get COVID-19, and this says nothing about how well they do. They didn't look at that. They were just purely looking at infections. And it doesn't mean if you're type O that you are that you're protected. So you could never say this person with type A got COVID-19 because they're type A. And you could never say, you know, this person didn't get it because they're type O. It just is you know, a change in risk, and, you know, statistics don't apply to the individual. So people who smoke, there's a certain percentage of those folks never get lung cancer, right? And there are a certain number of people who don't smoke who do get lung cancer. So it's kind of that sort of thing. And now in that one, you could say, well, that's a terrible analogy. Because most of the people who smoke and get lung cancer, you can say, yes, the lung cancer caused them to smoke. So I'll think of a better analogy. That's a terrible analogy. It said exactly the opposite of what I wanted to say. All right. Let's see here. Let's see what we got here.
Charles. I got a crazy question.
Oops, wait.
I'm Steve, Matt, and Charles.
Hey, Matt. I will
be
your neighbor soon.
I got a crazy question, and I am being very speculative, and I apologize for that. I also apologize for calling and asking a COVID question because I try to not do that. Okay, so RT.live and the COVID tracking project on them today. And RT.live has already stopped posting data.
Yes.
But the COVID tracking project.
What he's talking about is RT.live was where we used to look at the R-sub-T. Which was the real-life data regarding how many people one person would infect. And when you have a number that's less than one, you would expect to see decrease in cases over time. And RT.live just quit doing their thing and refer everybody to the COVID tracking project. I'm not 100% sure why they did that.
Also announced that they would stop tracking data on March 1st.
Oh, really?
Are you aware of this? And also,
no.
Is that a sign that we're crawling out of the tar pit of COVID? Is that a good sign or is that a bad sign? Or are they being silenced by the government?
No.
Some people will
I don't think it's that.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. That's a good question. So let's just explore this together because I wasn't aware of this. So I went to RT.live, which was one of my favorite websites to refer people to look at how we were doing. Because it would, if your state was in the green, the R sub T was less than one. And remember, there's R naught or R sub zero, which is the theoretical number of people that one person with an infectious disease would infect. And for COVID-19, that number is 2.4. For influenza, it's around 1.2. For measles, it's 12. That's how contagious measles is. And you can calculate from these numbers the percentage of population that needs to be immune for you to get an R sub T which is real life communication or communicability number below one. And so that's AKA called herd immunity. So when you have enough people that are immune, that one person can not infect more than one person. In other words, one person infects 0.9 or 0.8 or 0.7 people on average. If it's 0.9, 1,000 people would infect 900, which would infect 810, infect 720. I've used that those numbers a lot on this show. And that is also what we would call herd immunity. So the formula for that is herd immunity equals 1 minus 1 over the R naught. So if the R naught is 2, in other words, one person infects 2 people, 1 minus 1 over 2 would be 1 minus 0.5, which would be 0.5. So you would have to have 50% of people immune to achieve herd immunity. Now, that doesn't mean once you achieve herd immunity that it completely goes away the next day. That just means that cases will start to decline rather than increase. So you want a lot more than that. But when you've got an R sub 0 of 12, like measles, if you do that, that's 1 minus 1 over 12. The number ends up to be in the 90s. So you have to have 90%+ people vaccinated to achieve herd immunity, which means that we need to have universal vaccination for measles to prevent it. And I get a lot of people, you know, the measles vaccine causes more harm than measles itself. Yes, that's right, because we have a vaccinated population. So in 2008, 2009, we had eradicated measles from our shores. The only cases that we had in this country came from somewhere else. And I remember saying that on the show one time, and some anti-vaxxer said, you're a effing liar. And it's like, no, because, he had statistics that showed that there were measles cases in this country, but all of those came from somewhere else. It wasn't a single native case. And so when you have populations that don't vaccinate for measles, then you'll see these outbreaks, and it's very communicable. So, yeah. When you have a vaccinated population, of course, the vaccine, which is not 100% perfect, all medications have adverse effects, all vaccines have adverse effects, you'll get rare cases of people having maybe even a catastrophic adverse effect from a vaccine, which is tragic. But the upside is that if we vaccinate and accept that risk, which is hard to swallow, I get that. But the upside is we don't lose one kid in 1,000 who gets measles, because that's the way it used to be. I had a friend of mine in kindergarten who died from measles. I had 2 or 3 people in my school that were in wheelchairs from polio, because I'm effing old, and I remember time before there were universal vaccines. I remember rabies commercials, because people were terrified of stray dogs because rabies was, on the uptick before they started universal rabies vaccines. So that was a lot scarier world back then. And this isn't that long ago. You know, I was born in 50-something. And we're talking 70, no more than 70 years ago. I mean, not even 100 years. And it was there was real terror in this world, worrying about infectious diseases that we couldn't control. So anyway, don't remember what the hell I was talking about, but we're talking about the R sub T or RT dot live. So here's what, so now you have the context. Since the beginning of COVID-19 pandemic, we've calculated the R sub T, which has been a useful measure of how quickly the virus is spreading. However, we believe other metrics are now a better way to track the virus. Well, what are they? With that, we suggest you visit the following organizations which have alternative metrics. Okay, tell us what is a better way to track the virus. The COVID Tracking Project has been the source of our data from the beginning. They do not calculate R sub T specifically, but they have a host of other metrics. Hospitalizations, reported cases, et cetera. Oh, okay. Well, we always had that. I'm unimpressed by their explanation here. If you want to look at hospitalizations, by the way, don't go to COVID traffic, tracking product project. Go to COVID.stoutlabs, STOUT labs.com. And you can fiddle around with the data there in real time, and you can visualize it with Bollinger Bands. That was my innovation. Thank you very much. I'll give myself one of these.
Give yourself a bill!
And with Simple Moving Averages, also my suggestion.
Give yourself a bill!
Daniel Stout, who runs Stout Labs. But it's a great website. Okay, here's epiforecast.io. This group is run by the Center for Mathematical Modeling of Infectious Diseases, created many of the methods we were using to calculate R sub T. They currently calculate R sub T, and if you're interested in this measure, we suggest viewing it here. So let's go to epiforecast.io. And it says, identifying changes in the reproduction number, rate of spread, and doubling time during the COVID-19 outbreak whilst accounting for potential biases due to delays in case reporting. That's why you want a simple moving average, by the way. Some data sits on somebody's desk, and then they output it once a week. You'll see these sort of varying up and down numbers. The simple moving average across about 20 days will smooth that out and give you what the real trends are. It says these results are impacted by changes in testing effort. That's true. Increases and decreases in testing effort will decrease and decrease reproduction number estimates respectively, which makes total sense. Now, they don't do so much graphical analysis, but they do have a map of the United States with decreasing, likely decreasing, stable, and increasing numbers. And the only state that is increasing right now is Nebraska. But their reproduction number is 1.1. So their doubling time is 28 days and estimated new cases 486. So a reproduction number, R sub T, of 1.1 is very close to 1.0, which is also very close to 0.99, which is a reproduction number that will result in a net decrease in cases over time. So people say to me, well, masks don't work. No, they don't work 100% of the time. That's true. Matter of fact, they probably don't work 90% of the time. But when you have a reproduction number of 1.1, they only need to work 10% of the time to get you down to, with other measures, to an R sub T that's less than 1, and now you have decreasing cases. So I'm not a mask freak, and I'm not follow the science. I don't understand follow the science. Of course, follow the science. But don't use that as a political club to hit people over the head with. Actually follow the effing science and look at the math. This is just pure math. And we do work in live in a universe that can be adequately described by mathematics. So anyway, all right, I get off my soapbox for about a minute. So yeah, this is pretty good. If you liked RT.live, this is decent. It's not as cool as RT.live was, but in a lot of ways, it has all the same information. So that is epiforecasts.io. So we'll be using that from now on. All right. I don't think it's political. I think some of it is financial. You know, it costs money to do this. Daniel Stout, that runs Stout Labs, he has a little thing you can donate. By the way, please do that. Give him a dollar. It says, buy me a cup of coffee. Give him 50 cents. But these things cost money. It costs bandwidth. And I think RT.live had a lot of bandwidth that they had to deal with. And then just keeping it going, you just get bored with stuff. Like my COVID sit reps, I just didn't feel like I was adding anything to the conversation, so I just quit doing them, and they may have felt the same way. Let's see how Tennessee is doing. We are seeing a decrease, reproduction number 0.91 with a range of 0.73 to 1.1, and we are seeing a net decrease right now. But the thing that concerns me is that people are going to go, this thing is over. Well, I know some of my staff thought it was over until they got it themselves. So still, please be careful. Let's get through this thing. I want to be done with this. And then when we're done, we need to declare war on these damn coronaviruses. Coronavirus first, because if SARS had become a pandemic, it would have been a lot worse than it was. It was a regional epidemic. MERS, that's Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, killed about 30% of the people that it infected. Thank God it was not very transmissible. So death to all coronaviruses, that's first. And then we'll hit all the other RNA viruses next, influenza, Ebola. Let's see what the other RNA viruses are. They seem to be pains in the ass. Let's do a list of RNA viruses. Okay, come on now. Yeah, there's double-stranded RNA viruses, negative-strand RNA viruses, satellite viruses. Kiss my ass. Bunch of shitty little nanomachines, although we'll learn from them for real. We will learn so much from them as far as machines that can reproduce themselves, because that's all they do, but they just do it for no reason. And they just reproduce to no end. You could say humans do that too. I mean, we reproduce. What's the point? Well, the point is we can regard the universe. So we're not made. We grow out of this universe. We are an integral part of this universe. Every atom in our body came from the inside of a star. We are the mechanism by which the universe can regard itself. So that there is some purpose to that. There's no purpose to these asshole viruses. Okay, yeah, so there's viruses have horrible names. God, who's ever heard of any of these? Amalgaviridae, family Amalgaviridae. There's a whole family of double-stranded RNA viruses. Burnaviridae, Chrysaviridae, Cysta. Okay, all got to go. Well, there's a crap load of shitty viruses out there. Look at this list. This is unbelievable. Just go to Wikipedia and Google search for RNA virus and look at just this list. And, you know, there's a bunch of them we don't know anything about. Negative sense, single-stranded RNA viruses. They all got to go. I don't see the point in them. If you've ever read Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game, later on he starts talking about different species. Can we communicate with them? Are they alien to us, but can we communicate with them? Or are they so alien that we can't communicate with them? It's impossible. And they were called Varels. And those species were okay to destroy. You can tell it's late at night because I'm getting philosophical. Plus, I'm having a little Willets bourbon, which, anybody ever wants to send me anything, you don't have to. I don't even ask for that, but Willets is a pretty good thing to do. And then my allergies are kicking in. Plus, I am stressed to the max at work and on and on and on. So, you know, you're getting this show. But the hierarchy of foreignness was a classification system of humans and other species designed by Valentine Wigan in her letter to the Framlings as Demosthenes for classifying how alien an individual was relative to a subject. There are four tiers from least alien to most. Utlanning was defined as a stranger recognized as a human from the same planet as a subject but of a different nation or city. Utlanning means foreigner in Swedish. And then Framling was defined as a stranger recognized as human but from a different planet. That means stranger in Swedish. Ramen is a type of Asian noodle. Oh, no. Defined as strangers recognized as human but of another sentient species entirely. This term was only ever used to refer to the entire species as a whole rather than an individual member. So this would be aliens that we could communicate with. Ramen means the frame or framework in Swedish. Don't know why these are all Swedish words. And then Varelza were defined as true aliens. They may or may not be sentient beings, but are so foreign, no meaningful communication is possible. And Varelza means creature in Swedish. So in Ender's Game, they thought that these bug things were Varelza until they realized that they could communicate with them. And they had been trying to communicate with them the whole time, so they were really Ramen. And you can't destroy Ramen. You can destroy Varelza, you know. So viruses are freaking Varelza, and we can destroy them. And I feel no compunction about that whatsoever. I've searched trying to find some good that viruses do in this world. And if you can think of something, feel free. But and we can have a conversation about that. But they're not alive, and I think eradicating them could only be good for the human race. All right. Let's do something different. Here we go.
Your favorite caller. Hey, question. Listening to a podcast the other day, and they brought up a little silly question about something I don't think you've covered. Earwax. Is it better to use a cotton swab to clean out your ears?
No, or that's terrible.
Let your ears naturally do what they're supposed to do with the wax as far as keeping junk from getting in your ears and it naturally getting out of your ears?
Yeah, don't do that either. Well, unless you're one of those lucky people who produce just the right amount of wax so that your ear canal is protected, but it doesn't clog up. So I used to make money clearing people's ear canals out. You know, they would come in and say, I can't hear. You look in there, it's just plugged with earwax. And we had a big, giant chrome syringe thing that you could fill with warm water. And you'd have the patient hold like an emesis basin up against their ear to catch the water. And you would just shoot this stuff in there with this syringe. And the way it was constructed was such a way that your thumb went in this loop and your fingers went on these other loops to the side of the giant chrome cylinder, and you could get a lot of pressure, and you could just flush that stuff right out of their ear. And those were really grateful patients. They didn't mind paying money to do that. And then I just started feeling bad about it, because really you can just go to any CVS, Walgreens, or any mom-and-pop pharmacy for the most part and buy an earwax kit. And it's basically the same thing. It'll be a little bottle of glycerin with some hydrogen or some kind of peroxide in it that'll foam up. And you lay down, watch Seinfeld. That's about the right amount of time. Lay down with your bad ear up, put about 5 or 6 drops, just fill the ear canal, and you'll feel it bubbling up in there. And the bubbles kind of get behind it and loosen it up, and then the glycerin softens it. And you lay there for about 25, 30 minutes, and then you get up, fill the basin with lukewarm water. You don't want it too hot. And then you take the syringe, fill it up, now you're putting the bad ear down, pointing into the basin, and then you squirt this syringe or this bulb syringe into your ear, kind of at an angle. You don't want to shoot it straight in. What you really want to do is get it to bounce or go against one wall and then wash along the eardrum and then come out down the other wall, if that makes sense. So you want it to slosh around in there instead of spraying it straight in, because what's that going to do? It's just going to push the wax in even further. And when you do this properly, after 2 or 3 times, you'll see a big bolus of disgusting earwax fall into the basin of your sink. Now, if you use Q-tips, what's going to really happen? Q-tips should be used to clean the helix and to put on makeup and stuff, not to shove into the ear canal. When you do that, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to traumatize your ear canal because there isn't any wax in there, you just think there is, or you're just going to mush the wax deeper into your ear canal. It's very rare that you can use a Q-tip to actually get out a large bolus of earwax. So please just don't do that. Buy a murine ear kit or just any ear kit. And now they have a new one that has a trigger on it, and you kind of pump the warm water into your ear like a gun. It's like looks like a spray bottle. Well, it is a spray bottle, except it's got a nozzle on it that shoots a stream of warm water into your ear. And that works kind of like what I used to have in my office. And you can buy those now at CVS. I've seen them as seen on TV. Just you could probably Google, let me see, as seen on TV. Seen on TV earwax. Let me just put that in, see if it comes up. Yeah, there it is. Okay. So, come on. Nope, I don't like this. This one's simply twist to grab and extract earwax. I don't like that. This one's got an auger on the end of it. Now, this you would have to have an eardrum absolutely full of earwax, and then it's got an auger bit on it, and you twist it, and it inculcates itself into the earwax bolus, and then you just pull it out and it can't slip off. That's not what I'm looking for. Here's an earwax vacuum. Ooh, let's look at this and see if this is anything.
Hang on. What's up? Today I wanted to do a new series that hopefully you guys will like and I'm going to be announcing
it's called the Wax Vac. Okay. Let's see if she pulls a big glob of earwax out of her ear.
There's nothing supposed to go in there. There's nothing in there. Oh, I can see a little bit of stuff.
Mm. Okay, I don't know. But you could try something like that. I think that would be okay as long as there's not a lot of negative pressure, because the thing you don't want to do is start yanking around your eardrum. That's what you're trying to avoid, is trauma to the eardrum itself, and yet getting that wax out of there, because as long as it's in there, pushing up against the eardrum or the tympanic membrane, as we would call it, then you can't, it can't vibrate. If it can't vibrate, you can't hear well. All right. I want to get to this other question. Let's see.
Hey, Dr. Steve. Hi, Tacey.
She's not here.
Hi, Dr. Scott.
I'll tell her, though. He isn't here either. He's an asshole.
I suffer from low testosterone due to a pituitary tumor.
Okay.
I know all the negative aspects of low to no testosterone.
Yes.
Are there any positive benefits?
Yeah, sure.
Can you speak on that, please?
Yeah, positive benefits to low testosterone? Yeah. No more pesky libido. You don't have to worry about having intercourse anymore. So I guess that could be a positive. I was thinking the other day, how much easier my life would have been if back in the day I just didn't give a crap about having intercourse, and how much less trouble I would have gotten into. I wouldn't have tried the trifecta on the weekend and then have one of their boyfriends show up banging on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had to throw him down the stairs and stuff. Well, hypothetically, I mean, I'm just, whatever. But, that's about the only thing I can think of. There probably is the other thing is a decreased incidence of testosterone-sensitive tumors like prostate cancer. I mean, what we do when someone has prostate cancer is we give them Lupron or we do an orchiectomy, in other words, remove their testicles to prevent them from producing any more testosterone, because testosterone and prostate cancer, like, a match and kerosene. Let's see, benefits to low testosterone. So you're seeing behind the scenes today. This is how I find some of these answers. Let me see. Okay. Low testosterone is good for men and families, says something. One of many things new dads give up for their kids is ironically the sex hormone that got them into this mess in the beginning with. Oh, this mess. Testosterone dips are often synonymous with fatherhood, and that can cause postpartum depression, lower libido, and, shall we say, peak dad bod. Ugh. But the research suggests low T isn't all bad, and there's a growing body of evidence that the teacup may be, half full after all. Come on. This is fatherly.com, by the way. You don't have to report and try to be funny. Low testosterone may be why you're such a family man. You can't blame the baby for knocking out your testosterone completely. Studies suggest that marriage facilitates a testosterone decline as well. Gee, I wonder why. And there's additional evidence that as soon as you make a conscious decision to be a family man, your T started its gentle march downward. Well, that's interesting. You can't separate mind from body, that's for sure. This may seem to add insult to injury, but scientists suspect it's nature's way of helping you chill out around screaming babies and spouses. That may make sense. Remember, we talked about multiple times in the past that very small variations in human response to things can lead to big amplification over time when we're speaking about evolution. So a kid that when they're 14 in the cave says, these people I'm living with are assholes, I'm moving to the next cave where they're cool, would have diversified the gene pool by mating with people in that other cave rather than in their own cave. And over time, that may have provided a survival benefit that is that we still see today in modern adolescents who tell their parents to go to hell until they hit about 22, 23, and then they realize, wait a minute, those people in that old cave weren't as dumb as I thought they were. I wonder how I'm supposed to balance my checkbook. And then they come running back and they're normal human beings again. So this may be one of those things where those men in a cave back in the caveman days that had a decrease in testosterone after babies were born in the cave may have been less likely to kill the mother or do something dastardly or kill the kid or whatever, who knows, you know. That small difference may have been enough to make that gene very successful in being passed down through future generations. So it would keep them from running off with other people. And obviously this isn't 100% of people, but it may have been enough to keep the species going. So that's very interesting. All right. So fatherly, despite the yucks, the attempted yucks in their reporting, that's kind of an interesting article. All right. So anyway, that's about all I can think of, though. Oh, my allergies are killing me.
Steve, this is Darren.
What?
My teeth are made of moon rock.
Oh, boy.
April Fool.
Fuck that up. Damn it.
April Falls.
That's terrible.
I drill a lot in my sleep.
Really?
Like tons. Is there anything I can do to stop it besides eating a shotgun? Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy, this is a terrible call.
You said it, brah. And the thing is he was doing Edgar, except he was asking about drooling. And the one thing about Edgar, as we all know, his mouth is dry. One of my favorite ghost stories of all time was watching Jim Norton tell his ghost story, knowing full well that he was talking about Edgar, his character from Opie and Anthony. If you haven't seen it, it's quite humorous if you're aware of Edgar's history. Anyway, drool is just nothing but excess saliva, and if it comes out of your mouth, we call it drool.
And I drool sometimes. I wear a BiPAP mask. It's very attractive at night. And sometimes I'll drool into the thing, and it's so disgusting that I have to rip the mask off, and I can't sleep with it the rest of the night. So I'm not a fan of drooling while you're sleeping, too. It's very common, but every once in a while it's a symptom of something else, like a sleep disorder or another health condition. So, or if you have multiple sclerosis or cerebral palsy, I doubt that that guy has it, although he sounded like he might have something like that, although I think he was doing a character. The most common cause of drooling when you sleep is it's pretty commonsensical, and it totally has to do with Einstein and gravity. When you sleep on your side or on your stomach, particularly, where's the saliva going to go? And if you open your mouth and you snore, and then you've got a bolus of saliva in your mouth and you're sleeping on your side, it's just going to leak out. And that may be all it is. So particularly people who have trouble breathing through their nose, and they open their mouth to breathe, and then the saliva comes out. If you have blocked sinuses like I do now, you're going to drool more than usual, and it's because you're breathing through your mouth again. People with reflux will also breathe through not only breathe through their mouth, but they will be increasing the amount of saliva produced because they have noxious acidic fluid working its way up from the stomach up to the esophagus, and a lot of times into the posterior pharynx, or, you know, the lower part of the throat. So those people will also drool. And then some medications will do it as well. And you just got luck. Most of these are for crazy people, which, you know, maybe that's it. People with sleep apnea will also drool at night. And so I have that. I have complex sleep apnea, which means that when you put the CPAP mask on, I stop breathing. So I have to have BiPAP. I'm just a treat. And the BiPAP actually forces air into my lungs, and then I breathe back out under pressure. And it works pretty well. I feel a million times better since doing that. So change your sleep position. That just makes sense. Sleeping on your back if you can. If you can't sleep on your back, try putting a wedge under your bed, or, you know, bricks under your bed, so that you are slightly angled upward with your head above your feet, just slightly. And that way, if you're sleeping on your side and you open your mouth, hopefully gravity will keep the saliva in the bottom of your mouth rather than having it leak out. I'm looking at healthline.com, and they said try biting on a lemon wedge and the citrus. They say here that can thin out your saliva. I don't think that's what it is. I think when you bite on the lemon wedge, you're actually emptying out your salivary glands. And I can't imagine that that's a very long-term solution, but it might be for some people. And if they're flowing more freely after you do that, and when you stop, maybe it'll decrease the amount of saliva that's produced during the night. There is a thing called a mandibular device, something you put in your mouth. It's like a mouth guard, and you sleep more comfortably, and you drool less. I have one of those, and I think it's really helped. Since I started using my device, so I've got all this crap in my head when I'm trying to sleep. It decreases that whole spontaneity. My wife and I have talked about trying to have intercourse while both of us are wearing our CPAP masks, and we were just so grossed out by the idea that, it was nothing more than just sort of a passing, boy, that would be weird. But since I've started using the mouth guard, I find that I kind of clamp down on it. I don't breathe through my mouth as much. I'm going to have to use Afrin tonight. I'm not a big fan of Afrin for long-term use, but short-term use, it's great. It's absolutely the best decongestant, and that will help me breathe tonight and drool less. And then there are some people that have sialorrhea. So that's your word for the day. is sialorrhea. That means excess production of saliva. So diarrhea is excess production of watery stool. And rhinorrhea is excess production of snot. So sialorrhea is excess production of stuff from the salivary glands, and that would be saliva. So those people can take anticholinergic drugs that will give them dry mouth, which will help, but the problem with that is anticholinergic drugs over time can increase your risk of dementia and stuff. So probably a better solution is Botox. So botulinum toxin injected into the salivary glands will decrease the amount of saliva produced, and it works pretty well. So now, there are cases where a doctor recommends getting your saliva glands removed. I want to have that done. I have an eggplant-shaped head because of my parotid glands. Those are the glands that increase in size when you have the mumps, and they're just gigantic. And apparently that's just a normal part of aging for some people, but I hate it. And I've tried to get an ear, nose, and throat doc to take them out. If you know anybody that's interested in doing that surgery on me, I would be happy to at least give them a plug on the air, and I'll even pay for the surgery. Okay, I think we have maybe time for one more question.
Hey, Dr. Steve, what's up?
Hey, man.
How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Cool, great.
Good.
So I am trying to wear an N95 mask in my office all day.
Yeah.
A nurse friend said you could tape it to keep your glasses from fogging up, tape the top of it to your face. And I'm wondering if there's tape for that, some kind of special tape. I've been using masking tape. If there's anything wrong with doing that.
Now, you shouldn't have to. I think what's going on is you've got the wrong size N95. One thing that you can try to, now if it's a true N95, you should be breathing through it, and it shouldn't be fogging your glasses up. So if it is a true N95 and it's fogging up your glasses, you probably got the wrong size. But I'm not sure why you're wearing an N95 at work. You shouldn't have to do that. A regular, you know, surgical mask would do. And on those, for those are very difficult to not fog your glasses up. Twist the ear loops. Instead of putting them completely around your ear, twist them 90 degrees and put them around your ears, and that'll stop it. What it's doing is it's just venting out the side instead of venting out the top. With surgical masks like that, you generally don't breathe through them very efficiently. You breathe around them. And the reason that they work is if you cough or you're breathing or you're, you know, talking loud, any viruses that you have will be shunted to the sides and the top and the bottom rather than shunted straight out. So they're not perfect, but they do decrease transmission, so we still feel that they're useful. Now, an N95 actually filters the air, and when we do it, we have to put our head in a hood, and then they'll spray this stuff in there, and if you can smell it, then you're not wearing your mask properly. So if it's fogging up your glasses, you're not wearing it properly, or it's not a real N95, or it's the wrong size. Okay? All right. Let's, I think this will be a quickie.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey.
My name is Coulter.
Hey, Coulter.
I'm just responding to what you just described as kind of the weird paralysis with dreaming. And I've had so many issues with that, and I would love to discuss this more with you.
Yeah.
Thank you. My number is...
Okay. Let me skip over that.
39.
Jesus, dude. Come on. That's it? Oh, okay. I thought that was a question about vaccine and antibiotics. Okay. I don't know what happened there. Okay. Well, listen, I kind of crapped the bed there at the end. Sorry about that. Pulling up the wrong phone call, but that's, you know, a cringe of the week for Carl and the crew. And time to wrap it up anyway. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, that Gould girl, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Chowdy 1008, Eric Nagel, the Port Charlotte Whore, Roland Campos, sister of Chris, Sam Roberts, She Who Owns Pigs and Snakes,
Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, She Who Loves Brett Spriss and Pocky, who's no clue what that is, Matt Kleinschmidt, Dale Dudley, Holly from the Golf, the great Rob Bartlett, Casey's Wet T-Shirt, Carl's Deviated Septum, Patty C. Cups, Bernie and Sid, Martha from Arkansas's Daughter, Ron Bennington and Fez Watley, whose support of the show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel. SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, on demand and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners, whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.